Hello and welcome to another episode of Devs on Tape. Today, again at APEX Connected Düsseldorf this year. At first, hello Caro.
Hi Kai.
I promise not to forget that. And yes, last but not least, we have a very tremendous guest on our podcast today, the founder of APEX, Mike Hitchwa. Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Excellent.
Excellent. Right after your keynote, right?
That's right.
That's great. All right. For our listeners, I could not pretend that or expect that anyone doesn't know who you are, but maybe for the small amount of people who doesn't know or who don't know you, please introduce yourself for our listeners.
Sure. I'm Mike Hitchwa, responsible for database tools for the Oracle Database Group. And I was original creator of APEX, but also an application developer. So we build the tools for APEX, but my personal preference is I just love building applications. I love building apps with the Oracle Database and with APEX. And so truly use what we create. And it's been a great career.
Mm-hmm. So was it your first APEX Connect this year?
No, as one before in Berlin.
In Berlin at now. Okay. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, you introduced new features today. So you said you introduced the new starter apps in APEX. What about those applications?
So I felt it's 10th anniversary of the conference. And I definitely wanted to bring something. And so I made it a priority to create some applications. We decided not to talk about new features of APEX. The starter apps are available right now. You can download them today. But we want to have greater exposure to marketing. And so the marketing group told us if we discuss all of our new features in advance that no analyst or press will want to have a scoop because there'll be no scoop to be had. And so we think it's just fine. Like, why should we be talking about that? We should talk about, you know, other things. And then when APEX comes out, the next version, the features will become obvious.
Can you tell us more about the amount of new features in the next version of APEX? So just not specific on features, but
sure.
There was one slide in your presentation, if I remember correctly, that is showing the bar chart, how many features are introduced for each version. And I saw this green new bar with the new version, and it was way bigger than the other ones.
Well, way bigger, perhaps. It should be the release with the most features, and it should have more features than the previous one, which is the previous record holder. So, yeah, so we have a larger development team. We're very proud of that. We have over 100 APEX developers. And, of course, APEX sits on the shoulders of our database where we have 7,000 developers. So, you know, there's quite a bit of, you know, effort going into this technology stack. And so we expect to have a lot of new features in a lot of different areas in this next release.
When you presented these sample applications, I wondered if a strategic planner is something like this P-Track application we had a few years ago.
It's very similar to P-Track. It's sort of the successor, and I was trying to correct things that I felt that were not right in P-Track. So P-Track had the strategic planner, I think, is more in line with what we want to do for planning out next releases of APEX. And also, because it was created 10 years later, it's got a much better user experience from my perspective.
So I've noticed that some people were very sad that you didn't update the P-Track application anymore. So every listener, which was sad, you can download it now, the strategic planner, on the apex.oracle.com.
That's correct. And I was surprised that P-Track was actually used by over 10,000 people and used it regularly. And I met people at Oracle, and I was sitting next to them at some event, and they had their P-Track open doing their own things. And I thought, quite strange. They had no idea who I was. And I was just running this. Oh, yes, we use this software. It's called P-Track.
Cool.
But yeah, so now it has a successor, and apologies for taking so long to have it out.
I also like P-Track from the perspective of designing. So you had some special design things like this sidebar on the right side, I think, and this comment section, etc. And I really liked it to show the customers what is possible with Oracle APEX design-wise.
Yeah, I think that's important to show these starter apps where they're actually functioning apps. You might not like what the software does, but the idea is that it shows a reasonably complex piece of software, maybe 150 pages with quite a bit of interactions, different types of user interfaces. And so, you know, you can like it or not like it, but I think that it's good to see an example. Mm. And I think that a lot of customers will be able to take it and then just customize it, change the tables, you know, remove the parts they don't like, add the parts that they would like to have in their environment and make it their own.
Yeah. So we take a a few steps back. So I've seen on your LinkedIn profile, you're at Oracle like almost 36 years.
Yes, it's been a while. It's
really impressive. So how did you get there?
Had a job for 2 years prior. I was working at this company called CACI, but we worked on the Oracle database, and we worked on Oracle 4, where we had a predate SQL Plus. So it was called UFI, user-friendly interface. And so when I eventually came to work for Oracle, I had to explain that we no longer had a user-friendly interface. We have SQL Plus. But anyway, it was Oracle at the time. It was a very small company, maybe 2,000 people at most. And I was fortunate to get an interview and get a job in sales consulting. And so you would think that people would want to go into development, but I was local to Washington, D.C. area. And so sales consulting was it. But I thought that it was a great way to start your career, because as a technical sales consultant, my job was to travel to all of our customer base, listen to all their complaints about our software, and show them how to fix it. So I did performance tuning. I built out applications in Oracle Forms. And so I thought it was really a great way to have an education. So I would travel the world and the United States listening to customers explain exactly how they do their business and exactly what they need from software. And then they asked me to show them how the Oracle software would, you know, solve the problem. And I thought that was the best education one could get. So I thought I was very fortunate to start there and then transition into a development track.
And Cal already said almost 36 years at Oracle. So we asked Chris Rice the same question. In today's time, many people, mostly younger people, are not staying that long at a company. So, I mean, in your case, it's obvious what keeps you there, right? It's Apex. So you can go away and see a different company, raising up whatever you created back then. But what are the additional points? Why are you staying for so long in one software company?
You know, things get easy when things go well, right? So if you're successful once, then you're successful twice or something like that, things are easy. But it's not necessarily true for every generation or every person. And just to be clear, I'm so pleased with my career, and I thought that's gone well. But there's a lot of luck involved too. And so I think that people do change jobs because they feel like that they're constrained or they're unable to fulfill what they want. And so one of the things that I did, which I feel really lucky about, is that I was able to do exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to build application development, and I wanted to provide it for other people to use. And so I was able to fulfill that. So for me, there was no question to want to change because I was doing what I wanted to do.
So now Senior Vice President of Software Development at Oracle. So how many people are working for you right now?
Probably about 330 or thereabouts. So it spans multiple responsibilities. So SQLNet product, the database drivers, JDBC and all of the database drivers, the tools for ORDS and SQL Developer, the database consoles for cloud, and of course, Apex, and a number of Apex special projects that are, you know, building out solutions for the company in Apex.
I was very surprised, and I was very happy to see that, let's call it a manager, having 300 people working for him, and stood on the stage and said, I programmed a little application for you all, and I think it could be nice, and I decided to have this three dots, dot, 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 navigation thing. I thought it's a great UX and UI for you, and try it out, and let me know how you like it. This is very sudden to see that someone is still in development.
And what's interesting is that I really like building out Apex applications, and it's not that technically difficult, especially if you can, you know, use the declarative parts of it. And so the hard part is the parts that you can't do declarative. You want to do something, but you can't. And so that was one of the things that building these apps gives me a perspective on the whole platform to make sure that it meets what developers want. And so we definitely got them ready for this. Literally, while I was sitting in the chair, we were making the final changes and deployments to GitHub. And it was done with 15 minutes to spare.
Great. So how much influence do you have still on Apex? So you already said that 100 people are working in the Apex team. There are a couple of product managers that are influencing what features coming in the product. But how much influence do you have still in introducing new features in Apex?
I think I have some, but I try to keep it very balanced, because I know when I was coming up that, you know, you want to get the most out of your employees, and that's to unleash their own creativity, and you don't want to tell them everything to do. I don't think it's good for, I don't think the employee likes it, and I don't think you get the best best results. And so you want to have this balance between, you know, allowing people to do what they want to do and bring their level of creativity and their special sauce to the mix, but also to have that direction. And so I thought my keynote presentation today was kind of trying to outline a number of the key tenets that make Apex Apex and to be able to innovate within that. But having said that, I definitely have my pet projects and my favorite features. And so, you know, I like faceted search. I thought that was something I drove pretty hard. And there's other areas like this Apex language. I have the same thing. But I want to make sure that I leave space for people to, you know, I'm happy to review things and look at things, but I'm actually more happy that someone has a better idea than I am than if I tell them the idea. Because I want the technology to be successful. And I think that, you know, I'm just so happy that a new developer could create something or come up with something that I didn't think of that was just really a great idea. That makes me super happy.
Mm-hmm. I wondered, because you are also responsible for example, for SQL developer, right?
Yes.
Etc. And now that Chris got promoted also to senior vice president.
That is correct.
Okay, right. Perfect. Are you still working together?
In fact, we're actually working more closely together. So as you might know, Chris Rice is also responsible for ORDS, Oracle REST Data Services, which is the mid-tier to Apex. And so there's a great opportunity moving forward to have a tighter integration to make Apex more efficient and to leverage more capabilities of ORDS within Apex. And so we're working on special projects inside of Oracle as well. And so it's really the Apex team and the ORDS team are really two sides of the same coin. And so ORDS provides the ability to publish RESTful web services from the Oracle database. So it's more of an API tool, and Apex is more of like a user interface tool, but it's the same technology and the same thing. And so there's a lot of areas in common. So Chris Rice also wrote the original SQL workshop, which is still used inside of Apex. And so that was from way back. And yeah, so it's really just one big team that builds out the whole stack. And a lot of customers just use ORDS because they just want REST APIs on Oracle database data. And some customers, you know, just use Apex because user interface, so they don't need an API. But the best is to be able to marry both and have both APIs and user interfaces with Apex and ORDS, have it be a seamless experience all from one company with one, you know, one team and designed and tested together.
Mm-hmm. And I think I also talked about the new object viewer in
Object Browser.
Yeah, things in Apex. And that you had also discussions about should we redesign it, should we change it, or should we just use the SQL Developer Web, which is also coming with the ORDS.
There's kind of a conundrum there. There's a where when you log into Apex, you're logging in as an Apex username, password, and that gives you your privileges and your parsing schema. And with a SQL developer, you're connecting as a schema. And so there's a slight difference in your privilege model. So we want to make it as easy as possible for any Apex developer. So we added in 23.2 a click where you just click and run SQL Developer Web. So you can get SQL Developer Web has a nicer SQL interface. You can run multiple SQL statements at a time more easily. It has a better syntax highlighting. You can have autocomplete of your table names, which is not available in Apex at this time. And so the ideal is to have a mix, but one might say, well, why don't you just use SQL Developer and not have Apex? And the rationale is because the authentication and the user experience is integrated. So hopefully we'll be able to provide the best of both native to Apex as well as the same code path working in SQL Developer Web. Mm-hmm. That would be the ideal. We're not exactly there yet, but we're working on it.
So talking about the size of the team and the traction Apex got, yeah, that Larry Ellison is talking about in his keynotes and so on, one of those questions that is happening each and every time is, how long does Apex stay for free?
Yeah,
so there's no dynamic that I can see that would change that model. And so it's kind of weird, like you do something for 20 years consistently and they're wondering, like, why would you do it the 21st year if you did it for 20 years? And there's really no benefit, I don't think, to having it being a costed model. I think that the reason people think of that is that the competition is costed because they have companies that are just dedicated to doing one thing. And if you have a company dedicated to do one thing, you have to charge for it. But Oracle has many products, like we're trying to get customers to move to our cloud. We think we have a competitive cloud, and we want people to use our database and like our database. And we specifically want application developers to use and like our database. And we think that Apex is a great draw for that. And so, yeah, there's no intention that we have to make Apex costed.
That's exactly what I thought when I started with Apex 4.2, I guess, that a team of like 10 or 15 people at most is working on a product that might influence the developers to stay at the Oracle database or go to the Oracle database for their applications. And now if the team is like 100 people, marketing and everything and so on, that sometimes I ask myself if it's getting a bigger product that should be, not should be, but would be considered at some point to earn.
Yeah, money, so, right? So Oracle is building out Apex functionality in Cerner and for hopefully in the future for Fusion Apps. We haven't done it yet. We have an intention to do it. We're trying. And we building out for the GBUs, there's maybe 30 or 40 Apex SaaS applications available through those. And so the size of the team is because to support those applications, which have sizable business, you don't want to underfund the tool that builds them. So the idea is that you invest in the tool, and you don't have to invest in all the workarounds that developers need to write. And so the theory is that it's cheaper to hire an Apex developer than it is to, you know, work around the deficiencies of Apex to build out SaaS.
How does the hierarchy?
Yeah, hierarchy.
Inside the company when the team grows so much. So I saw that Mark Sifts was like as a product manager on the top line with many people working for him. But is this big team sometimes kind of a competition to work all together on the same product that was just built by 10 to 15 people?
Yeah, I mean, I've never really cared about who works for who or who has what title. And I think that maybe I'm naive, but I somehow feel like no one really cares, right? Like we just kind of work together, who works for who or what. That is an HR responsibility thing. And what we really just want to do is divide up the work for Apex and Words and other things and see it through. But we internally, the hierarchy is kind of like a necessary thing that we have to do because just the way it is. But I never go into a meeting thinking, you know, we're gonna make a hierarchical decision here. That's something that I don't think happens that often. Try to be driven by, you know, what the customers want, what the product needs, and just be driven by the facts, right? Mm-hmm. And they are what they are. And the best person for the job is the best person for the job.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great position.
Point of view, maybe.
Thanks. Point of view, yeah. Okay, so you're already talking about this, make this happen for, or make this reachable for everyone. So you also have the apex.oracle.com workspaces you can create. And you also published a new cloud service for Apex developers, which is not that expensive like the rest might be. So
right. So on the cloud service, so we have the Autonomous Database. And the Autonomous Database is different than other cloud databases in that it's fully managed. So it's for the customers that don't want to manage their own patches and that when there's a patch needed, you don't have to be even alerted. We'll just take care of it for you and we'll do it with the least amount of downtime, hopefully zero downtime. And so we have a whole Autonomous Database infrastructure that we've been working on and continue to work on. And so the Autonomous Database is a strategic direction for Oracle. We want to run all of our apps on that. And so it's one of those things where you invest in Autonomous Database and it makes all the other parts of your business go better. And so we feel that the Oracle has such a pretty broad portfolio of applications through acquired technologies as well as our homegrown like Fusion Apps. And if we leverage our Autonomous Database, whatever deficiencies it might have, we'll be able to improve it to be able to run, you know, hundreds of large companies, total ERP systems in our Autonomous Database. If we can pull that off, we think that the Autonomous Database will be able to run, you know, most company applications. And if not, of course, we have Exadata, but that was the philosophy there. And then on the Apex service, so when you buy an Autonomous Database, you have the full capability at a certain cost. And for about a quarter of that cost, you can get the Apex service, which is the identical piece of software, but it doesn't provide the SQLNet connectivity. So if you had a Java application you wanted to connect, there's no SQLNet. And so it's just only Apex. And so if you were just an Apex developer, you literally get the same product minus the SQLNet, and you pay it one quarter of the price.
When I started, this whole cloud thing was not a thing there. out there, and there were many on premises, and it was expensive because it was enterprise, etc., etc. Now with the cloud and the autonomous database, it was much cheaper then, and now we also have the Apex service, which is cheaper again, and so it's more possible for maybe small businesses and maybe also private people to develop applications.
Don't forget Oracle XE, right? So we got an upgrade on there, so you can get an almost complete new database with all patches up and running with Apex 2.
Yeah, it's the free edition, the developer free edition.
Free developer edition, somehow the name.
Yeah, XE is, I keep saying XE internally as well.
Yeah.
But yes, it's called that too.
Yeah, but speaking of apex.oracle.com, so you already said that the new Apex version comes with a lot of marketing from Oracle, and that's therefore, it's not allowed for you or not?
No, it's not that it comes with marketing. It's that we would like the marketing group to help us publicize our 24.1 release. And to publicize it, you want to get people in the press, Bloomberg News, other people to write stories about it.
Yeah.
And they can't write a story that's already been told. Mm. So,
sure.
So that was, they just told us, hey, you know, why don't you not pre-announce your product and then we can help you. And so when people Google for Apex, I want them to see articles by respected news agencies. And I think we can do that by having this marketing program. So I hope I'm not withholding information from our customer base because we're transparent. We don't really, you know, it's not what we're trying to do at all.
Yeah.
We're not trying to hold secrets because there aren't any. We're just trying to get the maximum visibility for the product. And it helps the people in the Apex community as well, because if someone says, hey, I want to do this project with Apex, and someone might not know what that is, and they Google it, they're like, oh, well, here's some really great articles by respected journalists that they kind of back it up.
I mean, on the other hand, there's the community that is not informed about the new features, and you don't get the feedback from the community earlier, right? So I remember the last Apex conferences where we all saw like Apex from the lab or a sneak peek into the next version. And Mark Sees, Patrick Wolf, and all the Apex team, Carsten Sasky, for example, too, they got the feedback from us to see, okay, this feature is coming. Did you thought about this and that and this and that? And then you got feedback before the new release was out there. And on Apex Oracle.com, if it's not updated like an early adopter version before we can download Apex in the new version, then you are losing, or not losing, you don't have the big community beta testing the new software, right?
Yeah, those are clearly the downsides to that. In terms of the testing, we do have Apex World Corp, and so it's used for application development, but it's also used for deploying a mission critical apps. And so if we screw up Apex, we do deploy it there first, and if we mess it up, we'll get a call within minutes, right? So, so that's a very good test for us. We run it for a month or more, Mark Sees days, and I think that's critical for the quality of Apex. In regards to new features, if you're willing to be under non-disclosure, we're happy to have any conversations and show you anything you want to see. We just don't want to broadcast it and blog it. And so I think There's a balance to be had about working with the community. I understand that there's a slight drop in accessibility to it, but we release it twice per year. So that each incremental release is, you know, we've released like 42 releases. So is our 43rd going to be so transformative? It's really going to be additive or complementary. And so I think that hopefully we have a relationship with our customers such that, and the community, that they'll tell us like, hey, why are you going in this direction? Or why is this not working? Or I want to do this. And they do. I mean, no one's shy, but from my experience. And so, yeah. So anyway, it's something we're trying out. Hopefully it'll work.
So if you compare the size of apexcorp.oracle.com and apex.oracle.com, like the public and the intern.
Yeah. So the external one has a lot more users, a lot more college students, a lot more churn, but less sophisticated apps and less data. And so the internal one, some of the customers there are running sophisticated apps used by thousands of Oracle employees every day for mission critical jobs. And so they're just slightly different case, where the evaluation instance, the external one, is really just to become familiar with the technology. And the internal one is to get the business working.
Sure.
I mean, people don't internally, when they run these applications, they don't know that they're Apex. I mean, people that know the URL structure, of course they do, or they understand that the UI patterns would know. But in general, they're just doing their job and they just click on the web and it's like, you know, it's just a web application.
So Kai already talked about the community aspect of the new features, but there's also a community aspect in general for Oracle Apex. And I think it's a big part of it that, for example, on this conference, there are several developers, you, Chris, etc., which are also talking to the people, to the attendees in one-to-one sessions or just at the food or so.
Absolutely. If you want the scoop, just come and corner us and we'll disclose anything that would help, you know, you understand or help you give us advice on that. And we're so happy for having such a supportive community, because I think that that's what drives the whole product. I think that's been the secret sauce to success is the community, because the people want to use a technology that has a community, it has support, and the fact that you can get these plugins and you can get consulting services and you can get all this expertise available in the community makes it work, because the software is not, you don't just like install the software and have your company work. It's a tool. You install this tool and then the tool, when operated by professionals, works out best. And so anyway, the community is critical to success, obviously.
Yeah, I think it's also the community is so passionate that they, IT people, are doing this Apex wave.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I think that at least my experience is that people have this experience inside their own companies where they create a solution in Apex and they're asked to build something. A week later or a day later, they come up with a solution and it works, and it just works better than somebody else. And then there's alternative technology, and then they do it again. And it's like, wow, this is great. And it makes you feel good. You go home, you're like, well, I accomplished that, and people are using what I built, and people like it, and it only took me a couple days. And so I think that that's what's infectious about Apex, and that's what we're, you know, trying to fulfill. And if it was just quick to build the application, that's wonderful. But then if you had to do all your experience to upgrade it, that wouldn't be that fun, because you'd have to spend half your time fixing what you built a year ago and 2 years ago and 3 years ago. And so we think that having that dual capability of being quick to develop and having an easy support model where you can modernize the app without too much effort is really the secret sauce for Apex.
Mm-hmm. A year ago, maybe you also published new learning paths, which one of them is also for free, the foundation free. Yeah.
I made an effort to make them all free all the time, but I don't control everything, obviously. But yes, we do have the learning paths, and we also have the hands-on labs, which are good ways to get started. And we're hoping to have a lot of YouTube videos, and the community puts out a lot of information as well. And so I think the combination of the two is pretty good. And, you know, the educational stuff is great. You can get certified. You can get certified on new releases. You can get all kinds of badges and such. And so It's good to have that. I think that as more people start using Apex, that the education becomes even more important. And it's not so simple. And so we think we did a good job, but we think there are areas to improve. And so there's sort of like, do you want to learn everything the software does and have like a, like here's feature one, feature two, feature three, or do you want to be taught in a way where it's like, hey, let's just start with, you know, relational database and build on top of this and build on top of that. And so there's a lot of thinking we need to do about how effective to do the education. And a lot of people in the Apex community actually are senior and have a lot of expertise. And so the idea is to show them maybe they're really good at one area, but they're not good at, say, you know, RESTful web services or, you know, interoperabilities with that. Or maybe they're really good with that, but they're not very good with, you know, being able to customize themes or doing some other things. And so everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. And so the idea is to have education that's targeted to each person's needs.
Nice.
Speaking of education and learning, so you made some jokes in your keynote today. Obviously, our listeners didn't have the possibility to follow this presentation, so we can talk about that topic too. Speaking of AI, so we are the exact opposite of a non-disclosure thing, but let me ask you one question regarding the next release of Apex.
Yes.
Is there any AI stuff in it?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
There could be.
There could be. All right.
Definite possibility.
But yeah, to talk about the part in your presentation about AI. So you were expecting, or the question was, like a fun question was, is taking AI our jobs away from us? So you said jokingly that yes, it will, but in 30 to 35 years, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Maybe. But it doesn't take your job. It just changes your job. And I think that first, we're at the beginning of AI, right? And so whatever feature we may or may not release, it's not going to be, you know, transformative. It's going to take time, right? And so there's a lot of things that have to come into play to make AI fully realize a lot of its possibilities. It's going to take years and decades. And as we go on that journey, that it's just going to take a whole bunch of IT people to do that, as I pointed out in my talk. And then once you do it, you know, it's like, oh, you did the version one, but then there's, of course, like, well, you know, 5 years on, I'll bet whatever AI we have to now will be completely different. And so you'll have to do it again and have to come back and revisit a lot of that technology. There's another interesting thing, which I didn't talk about in my keynote, is that a lot of people will use Copilot and other technologies to generate a lot of code. And so the world will have a lot more code than it has now in the future, and that code will have to be maintained. And AI might not be as adept at fixing bugs in existing code that it generated than generating that code to begin with. And so there is a lot of challenges and pitfalls. I think there's the industry will take time. And I personally feel that generating metadata is better than generating the code, because the metadata is identical to what the human would have typed, but the generated code, I'm not sure that everyone would code that particular style. I know that the AI generates it based on how other people code, but it's, at least in my experience, editing my own code is hard enough. Editing someone else's code and their own train of thought and their own way of programming is really hard. And so, but with declarative, and you look and say, oh, this is a checked on or checked off, or this property is set to value A or value B, everyone, the machine, every human does identical. You can't tell, you can't do it differently. And so I think that consistency is something that the industry will have, which is this greater abstraction to the technology, not exposed to the individual program units.
So I was a little bit shocked. So yes, they're taking away our jobs. And then you said, but maybe in 30 to 40 years, and that's fine for me, at least. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, of course.
That would be the next generation that is frightened about
that. There'll be something else, right? Like if you look at, you said we had the internet revolution maybe 20 years ago, and maybe 10 years ago we had a mobile computing revolution where everyone in the world is glued to a cell phone, literally everyone in the world. Like, you can basically just assume that everyone has a cell phone, literally pretty much everyone. And they said, well, now we have AI. In 10 years, do you think that's it? We're not going to have any more revolutions? Of course we're going to have another revolution.
Sure.
And I also think, because AI, just saying, okay, I do AI, it's not the solution. You have to interpret, you have to say what you want, you have to be able to say what you want in
that's
the right,
right.
way.
This whole idea of prompt engineering is very interesting. And you're saying what you want to build a program, they're saying what you want to understand the data that you might be wanting to interpret. So there's a whole depth to this prompt engineering aspect. And especially if you start applying it to medical needs or other needs, then there's, you know, regulation on top of that. So it's maybe from a programmer's perspective, it's wonderful because you get a good start. And if it's not perfect, you just fix it. Mm-hmm. But if it's a medical advice, like you want it to be correct the first time, you don't want to say, oh, well, I was sorry about that. We'll just fix that up later. And so, yeah. So I think that there's so much potential and so much, it's complicated too, right? Like when I started my career, the world was a little simpler. There was just character mode devices. There just wasn't that much software that people used on a daily basis. Most people that worked at Oracle had nothing on their desk. They didn't have any, they had like one of those blotters so your pen wouldn't, you know, impact the desk, you know? And so anyway, the world's changing, but I think AI is going to transform, but I'm just so excited. As Larry Ellison once said in one of our meetings, he's like, wow, this is a great time to be alive, to be able to experience this AI revolution from the beginning. And I believe that. I think it's really a fun time to be in computer science.
Yeah, that's true.
So you had the title of your keynote was Oracle Apex 20 is in, are we done yet? And we saw a couple of slides inside this presentation, which was just saying, no, we're just getting started, or what's next and so on. So what do you expect to be Apex? What Apex would be in the next 10 years, maybe?
Yeah, so the biggest transformation that I see right now, AI will assist it, but I don't think AI changes it. AI just makes it easier and allows, the Apex builds out a form and a report, a chart. Why can't you just ask it, you know, to interpret the chart or to ask it details about the data underneath it? And so I think those types of things will be interesting. So you could show it some sales data. You say, well, is this sales data looking good or not? And it will just tell you, like, an honest answer. It's like, well, it's looking good, you know, in Northern Europe, but in Southern Europe, you're lagging here or whatever. Yeah. It'll just give you the answer. In respect to what I, during my keynote, I presented where I think Apex needs to go in the next 10 years, it just transformed from not only being a web-based IDE where you can build out low-code applications, but also providing a language. And so the language is not a traditional language. It's a low code, you know, human readable format that would be an opportunity to for those people that don't necessarily want to see things, you know, through a graphical user interface. Sometimes you have to, you know, you click on an application, then you click on a page, then you click on a region, then you click on the column within a report for a region, then you click on the attributes of the property for the report, then you click on another box that shows you the template options for the column for that. And so a lot of clicking, a lot of navigating, but if everything was kind of like in a document, it might be easier for people to do code reviews, to understand someone in a DevOps pipeline wanting to promote something to production. You want to make sure that it's safe and you can say, oh, yeah, that's good. That's good. Oh, no, that's not good. And so I think that in the ability to have AI generate code is just perfect. And I don't think AIs are going to generate, you know, people moving their mouse to click on IDEs. So, of course, it has to have a code representation that's extremely well documented.
That's what I thought. If you talk about a human readable export file or a human readable definition of the application in kind of a YAML or somehow like this markup, then it's also human speakable markup, right? So you could be able to just not let the AI create your application, but maybe translate your voice, you can have a chat
or an interactive interface.
Exactly. So
for example, you create a report on a table and you're like, oh, hide the ID column and hide the created on date. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now move the name to the first column. Of course you can drag and drop it and you can do all these things, but let's say you couldn't, like, why couldn't you just speak it? There's just no reason.
I mean, for the last decade, we are talking to customers and tell them how to define user stories, right? So they always have to be like, I'm as a manager want to have an application that enables me to do it like to this job, like this and like this. I want to click on this button to achieve this, right? This should be, if it's always the same pattern with the same language, then you should be able to interpret that, pass that, create this file, this Apex file from it, and then you can create an Apex application. And the second thing is what you already said, like hide this column, move this column to the first row or the first column. This could be like an interactive Apex application, not only for the developer in the application, but for the user. The user can interact with the Apex application and talk about like skip to the persona or skip to the search page and then now search for this value, show me the first result and so on. So you don't have to use your mouse and your keyboard. You can just talk to the application. The application is working with you. I'm just trying to figure out what new features in the next Apex version is coming, and I'm visiting really, really close how you react on my expectations.
No, I mean, I think that's the direction. I don't think it's going to come in the 24.1 release this summer, but the concept of being able to have a richer interaction with your data, I think is absolutely true. So like, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 years ago when we released interactive reports, it was wonderful because you could choose which columns you wanted to see and which order you wanted to see them. You could save reports, you could save filters, you could save sort orders, you could do group bys, you could do pivots, you could do all these things. So you had this control, but it required a lot of, you know, it was great, but maybe you could get the same thing easier by just speaking what you want.
Yeah, you're putting in huge effort to make it accessible in the application, not accessible for handicapped people, but how to implement pivoting in the application. So action menu, pivot, and then you do this model dialogue and make it as easy as possible for the user. You're putting so much effort in it to do it in a nice UI and UX. But if you say just pivot this, do that, do this, it would be way easier for the user. And a second idea or a second advantage for the AI part, for the human interaction with an application, would be the accessibility regarding handicap thing, right? So if there's a person that can say exactly the same as the person who can see, for example, and the application is just talking with you, like, okay, I moved the column to the front, maybe you want to print it for the other people, or should I read it from the top to the bottom, or you want to see the second page or something? There should be a huge advantage because the AI voice generation is already that good that you could enable your application to talk to the people who are sitting in front of it.
And I think that a lot of people that interact with software, it's not like you're going to go do 50 clicks every day, like on your planner, but maybe you have a particular, if you're a software development manager in the Apex team, you want to know which projects are at risk for a 24.1 release. Mm-hmm. And so you might just ask that question. It's like, and they always say, well, I define at risk as being, you know, a low percentage closed or a lot of, you know, chat going back and forth or the time it took to change from status 30% complete to status 40% complete was longer than typical. And so there'd be a lot of data analysis that could be done by an AI engine that could really kind of help the manager. So we strategic planner is also capable of tracking skills. So it's like, it seems like that this project is needing some extra help. I might advise these developers because they would have the same skills as the other developers that are on the current project. And so it doesn't do that today, but all the data is there. And so you as a human have to do it yourself. So the tool is not providing you that information, but there's no reason it couldn't. An AI engine couldn't do that.
I mean, this leads to a brainstorming session right here, but I have a next idea. I mean, if a manager enters the application, like the new application for the strategic planning, and the manager just asks what happened during the last 2 days, and you just see the delta of the data was changing.
I completely agree. That's all you want to know. All you want to know is you had control of the world Monday.
Yeah.
Tuesday you were busy and now it's Wednesday. What all's happened? And
just open the application, authenticate using the new email code thing, like passwordless, and then say what happened yesterday. Yeah. And the application is just preparing everything for you in the front end. You can see it, you can hear it if you want, and then you can ask questions.
Yeah, and what we've done is we've tried to create reports that you can subscribe to, so we can email your report every day or once a month or once a week, your preference. But that's not the same as being able to just have that conversation interface with it. And it's going to take time to work that out. And, you know, AI also runs the risk of companies overselling their technology. And so I don't want to be put in that thing. I want to accurately sell the potential, but the actual implementation is, I think that the people in the Apex community are going to do that. So
exactly. Yeah.
So like you were saying about, you know, what happened yesterday, but there could be other questions you might have, but we don't know what those are. And so you're going to discover that with your customers and with your end users. And I think that you'll be able to customize and get software's just going to change, right? So software, it was basically kind of like, oh, I can't remember all that. Can you just write it down for me so I can pull that up? What's my account balance? Okay, it's $458. Okay, I can buy this. But people are going to have totally different expectations.
So we will see template components, or we see plugins that are just doing this from the community side. And if you have today, you can send reports to an email with Apex. Maybe in 5 years, Apex is calling you in the early morning, like, hello, here's your friendly Apex AI bot, and I want to tell you what happened yesterday.
So, well, of course, it would just be in your glasses, right? Like, why
yeah.
It'd just be kind of.
Maybe you shouldn't go to the office today. There might be happening something. So stay at home and watch your data at home today. Yeah.
Well, I just have one question left. Actually.
One question left.
Yeah,
yes.
But it's totally lame after this AI stuff.
Try it, Kao.
Okay, I try. So you said you developed with Oracle Forms in the past. And now you're obviously on the Apex side, I think. And I've heard that there were many rumors about Oracle Forms that it is deprecated sometimes. But now I heard that they put more developers into it so they can.
Yeah, I don't think Oracle has any advantage to deprecate it. So Oracle Forms was created by this guy, Soleib Abbasi. He ran development. Then he also ran Informatica. I don't know if he still does, but he might. But brilliant guy and someone I really respected. And he created Forms in the early 1980s, 83, 84. The version one, it was kind of conversational. It was like, what table would you like me to create your application on? The emp table. Which columns would you like in the emp table? I'd like the ename and the job column. Anyway, but it evolved, of course. But I think that it was so successful and so ubiquitous that so many customers are using it, and it doesn't cost us that much to maintain it. The only downside of Forms I see is that it's not native web, right? And so if you want that experience, I recently bought a new TV and the sales rep sold it. I was watching him do it. It was an Oracle Forms app. And he was like struggling to kind of like, you know, but if he had a bigger font and he could just do the, you know, Command Plus or whatever and make the web browser bigger, it just would have been so much better. But there's no, if the application is not broken, doesn't need to be rewritten, why would Oracle want to pull support for it? So we've supported it since 83. It's 2024. That's a lot of years, and I don't see it, you know, stopping anytime soon.
Are you still seeing companies to choose forms?
I think some might, if they have, you know, five forms and they need to have a change, they might do it. But I think it's pretty rare. I think most people want to modernize, but always the question is, you know, is it better to spend time modernizing, money modernizing, or to spend doing something else? And so it's always a trade-off. And I think the IT managers, you know, that's your job, is to make these trade-offs, and I trust they do a good job at it. And so there's no reason to change if you don't want to. So that's the message, I think.
That's a great message to end this podcast. Thank you very much for come to our podcast and talk about the interesting topics about Apex AI and so on and brainstorm with us and avoid talking about the new release.
Hopefully I succeeded. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners. See you in the next one.